You know, some ill Baptists under
there. Oh yeah. And preaching an hour, I personally think if you can't say in a half an hour, then you don't need to be up there.
If you go over 30 minutes on a text, and I know sometimes I do, but it's just a little bit. If you go over 30 minutes, it needs to be a two-parter. Or even the church has to vote on you to be baptized. I mean, you don't think that's right?
I didn't know they did that. What would you do if you heard one no?
I'd say, you're an idiot. So you got baptized here?
No, I got baptized in the Pamlico Sound. Down by the river.
But by a church.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a river, it's the sand. Salt water.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know that takes.
Well,
it tastes kind of salty.
No, he used to dirty that. Use salt water to clean him up.
I don't know if that tastes nice, man. You better do that again.
It held me down for a while.
Because if you're already, you won't. Oh.
Yeah. Seriously?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Welcome to the other 167. Kenny Lewis, Pastor Ben Pierce, Garrett Leal. Funny, I got to tell you this before I forget it, because this is the only thing that I'm putting my phone to remind me. I did not want to forget to tell you this. So I wonder if I'm the only one. So Sunday morning, you did your prayer a little different at the end of sermon.
Right,
you said, let us pray. But then you didn't pray. Did you catch yourself do that? Did you know that you did that?
Well, I went back and watched it, and I was like, man, what was I doing?
Well, I tell you,
I was all over the place.
Well, I got to tell you something I've done. I don't know. I want to know. Poll the audience there. Y'all let me know if anybody else did this. Apparently, I had drifted off a little bit there because you said, let us pray.
Yeah,
and I bowed my head and closed my eyes. And I sat there I counted it when I played it back. It was 30 seconds. For 30 seconds, I sat there like this,
yeah, it was a
and you were talking.
Yeah.
No. I guess I thought you were praying, because I had my eyes closed, and you were talking. I thought it was the prayer, and I had just missed the Dear Heavenly Father. And then all of a sudden, midway, you said, let us pray. And I'm like, I thought we already were. What have we been doing?
I don't know what I was thinking there, man. It was one of them times.
It was great.
Went back, and I was looking at it, and I said, man, what in the world, Ben?
I loved it. I made the kids listen to it on the way home because it was such an ironic sermon. I loved the sermon, and I never thought about that passage in that way and how ungrateful the other nine were. And I was going to say to you when I left Sunday, is there a more American passage in the Bible than that that describes us as a society? Ooh. Any better than that one does?
Yeah.
But then we went to over to the grandparents for a little bit, and they were arguing over candy or something. And I said, y'all better straighten up. We're listening to the sermon on the way home.
Again.
And then I did. I made them listen to it anyway because it was worth it for them. I thought that was a good lesson for them to hear. But I pointed that out to them that, you know, hey, when I pointed out the prayer and timed it to how long I sat there with my eyes closed waiting for you to start.
Man, yeah, if I close my eyes for 30 seconds, if I'm not praying, I might be asleep too.
So my mom asked me this the other day, and I was going to ask you, so when you are praying up there,
right,
are your eyes open or closed?
Most of the time they're closed.
So she asked me the other day, she said, his eyes are closed, and I don't know how he doesn't fall off the stage. See, I don't ever watch you pray, right? Because I got my eyes, even if I'm live streaming, I still bow my head and close my eyes when you pray.
Yeah.
So I don't ever watch you during the prayer, but Mom, I guess, does. And she says, you're wandering around and walking around with your eyes closed. She said, how does he not fall off the stage?
Well, I stay close. You don't ever see me walk too far.
You stay pretty close.
But I will walk sometimes when I'm praying.
But you got an earpiece in it. I guess if you did drift, could somebody up in the sound?
No, I don't have an earpiece as much as my microphone just hooks around my ear.
Oh, okay, so you can't hear anybody.
Now, Doug and the musicians have an earpiece.
Okay.
And it helps them to hear the clicks of the rhythm, but also Keaton in the sound booth can say, hey, we need to, like one time he told Doug, he said, Doug, tell Ben to do this during the break, because I don't have one.
Okay. See, I thought that's what that was. I thought you were plugged in.
No, I don't have one. Oh, boy,
to
that's
a producer.
The last thing I need somebody in my ear talking. I'd be going crazy. But
yeah, they do have something. They can talk
to Doug. And in fact, I can't remember how it was, but one time my batteries, I was like, dude, I got no batteries. And they talked to Doug, and next thing I know, Doug had two underneath the podium and brought them to me during the offertory. So it's pretty neat that we can communicate like that.
I love to hear the behind the scenes.
But there is no, there, yeah. But now, oftentimes when I do pray, I notice I'll catch myself walking. I'm like, all right, make sure you don't fall off the stage or run into something. But usually right around that podium.
Yeah.
Because if you'll notice, like, the lights are geared right towards the podium. Uh-huh. I can go to this side and this side, but two steps outside of right beside it,
yeah,
and I'm in the shadow. So I try to stay in that light a little bit.
Yeah. I had a chance
to. It's limited my walking.
Yeah. I had a chance to put that one into action with the kids not long afterwards. They were complaining about not having something or wanting something or somebody else getting something they didn't have. And it was, I think you touched on it on Sunday, but this is what I told them. When you're thinking about the things that you would like to have that you don't, it's really hard to be in a good mood. And when you're thinking about the things that you do have that you're thankful for, it's really hard to be in a bad mood.
Right.
To be grateful and thankful for something that you have. And I don't care how much you have or how much you don't have. You can find things to put on both sides of that ledger for your whole life. There's always going to be things that you want. And there's always going to be things that you have that you should be grateful for. But it's, again, like a lot of things that I've said before on here and we talk about a lot, God telling us what to do is for our own benefit. Telling us to be grateful for the things we have isn't just so that he can be worshipped
just
and
so
praised.
Even
though he should be. Yeah. It's not. I don't mean he shouldn't be.
Right.
But he's not. He knows how great he is. You know what I mean? Like, if I forget to tell him, it doesn't mean he has any second thoughts about how great he is. He knows how good he is. But us taking the time to show our gratitude and to tell him how thankful we are, that's where our peace, love, joy, kindness, that's where all this stuff comes from.
Yeah.
And to live and to get to enjoy that.
That was a side note that I had that, okay, if you get to there and then the Lord leads you that way.
Yeah.
Oftentimes I'll have stuff written out to the side, and that is, okay, if the Lord leads you there, this is an interesting point that the Lord brought to my mind is, it's not that Jesus needs your thank yous. It's not that he has to have them. I think it's one of those of we are geared to, when we recognize him as the giver of all good things, man, it changes how you view things. It changes how you view people. I mean, when you live a life of gratitude, it'll change everything.
Mm-hmm. And again, when you're paying attention to, you know, I've talked so many times about trying to figure out why is God doing this, why is God doing that, what's the end game of this, when you waste all your time thinking about those types of things and you miss the blessings that are right in front of you, a lot of times, if you're looking up and paying attention, the why is right in front of you. You're already getting some of the benefits of what he's doing in your life, but you're still hung up thinking about the things that... I thought of this song, and I was wondering if I was going to get a chance to plug this or not. There's a song, really great artist, probably based on the number of listens she has on Spotify. I'm assuming a lot of people that listen probably know who she is, but Lauren Daigle, you know her. So there's a song she has called Look Up, or Look Up Child, something like that.
Right.
We were listening down the way to church one morning, and Reese was in the back seat, and she's been on her iPad for the whole trip. And we get on to Church Street. We turn on to Church Street, and she says, how much longer till we get there? And that song happened to be on when she asked that question, and I said, Reese, listen to the title of the song, Look Up.
Right.
And she looks up, and she's like, oh, we're here. Said, yeah, that's it. And so I've kind of made that joke with her. Just look up, because a lot of times your answers are already there. You just... Mm. Yeah, you've been so distracted that you didn't notice them.
And one of the things, and I was looking for it, and I'll find it eventually, but Paul writes to Timothy, and that's some of his last writings he's going to write, but he says, godliness with contentment is great gain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it. There's great gain to be had when you can be content and you are growing in your relationship with the Lord and you're growing in godliness. I think Paul is saying, hey, there's a secret to life. There's a way to enjoy life when you can be content. Doesn't matter what you have.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, oh, and by the way, contentment comes with 5 cars, you know, $1 million in your bank account. No, he says, be content in godliness. And so if we can ever get to that place where you're content with what you have and you are seeking after the Lord, there is a peace and you named it, peace and joy and a hope that's found. That, man, they'll get you through a ton of stuff.
Yeah,
but sometimes in our society, we have everybody is trying to, you know, sell you this, sell you that. Don't be content.
Because you don't measure up, or you don't have everything.
Well, I should be content with having one house, but everybody around me has two. So I got, you know, I want another one. Yeah, you know, just
I won't.
Or I could be around where I have two houses and someone has four. Mm. I need to have four. Yeah, yeah, we always want to. I think we're just so. I know I am. Just are. I'm trying not to be, but short-sighted. Because it really don't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not taking nothing with you. The Egyptians already tried that. It didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but we're so driven by what we see, not what we do not see. And we, Paul mentions that we got to be driven by what we see, you know, not see, yeah, not what we see, because what we see is temporary. It's not going to last. What we don't see is of eternal value. And I can, and I really get it with the world, because they don't know.
Yeah,
that's why it's important to be able to, you know, bring the gospel to people that don't know that. You know, mm-hmm. That is this all it is? And no, it's not all it is. But they don't know that, and I think that's one reason why we need to really be sharing the gospel as much as we can, and as hard as we can.
But you hit it on the both of those statements right there. What you said about if this isn't a lesson for America on its birthday, July 4th, even though it was the 7th, but name me a country that has more stuff, more money, more technology, more in everything. I mean, we have more of everything than except poverty and, you know, things like that. And we have some. I ain't saying we don't. But name a country that has more stuff than America. There isn't one. But then name me a country that's more dissatisfied.
Yeah.
There's no contentment.
More greed.
Or more disgruntled. Man, people are ready to fight at the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. People are, more. I got to have more. I got to have this. I got to have that. There is just more discontentment. Even though we have more stuff than anywhere else, and that goes to show, man, your stuff does not lead to contentment.
Yeah.
You may think it might, but it doesn't, because there are some folks who have a lot of stuff and just can never be satisfied and never be peaceful or peace on the inside.
You know, it goes back to your gratitude and your happiness, and I thought about this somewhat fitting, I guess, for this. So the world. I said Sunday morning, and this is, I loved this because this was not anything I had premeditated or cooked up or anything. When something like that hits me out of the blue, it's like, that's God. I know where that comes from.
We were
talking about it in the class the other day. I said, we spend so much time worrying about stuff. I mean, it's literally God's world. We're just living in it. You just got back from a cruise, okay? Right. All right.
Captain Ben.
Yeah, Captain Ben. All right. So,
Pastor Captain Ben.
Pastor Captain.
Yeah.
So, if somebody had given you a first class premium ticket on your cruise for free. It's yours, and you go out there. And there you go. You go spend a week on a cruise or 5 days on a cruise, whatever, and you spent your entire time looking at all the things you didn't have in that room, and I wish I'd have had this, and I wish I'd had that, or trying to rearrange and redesign the, move things around the furniture, get the captain in here to bring a different type of. What a waste, of the gift you had.
Yeah,
and that's
you could be out eating or whatever. Yeah.
And that's kind of us, and probably not in the entire world, but definitely in this country. That's how we look at this a lot of it. We've got a good life here. Yeah. We have a much better than it could have been. And the whole, look at all the gifts around us, the stars in the sky, the scenery on the planet. It's a cool place he gave us. There's a lot of corrupt people on it, a lot of bad things that happen on it, but he gave us a pretty cool home. Sure. And then all we do is complain about wish it was better. How we wish it was different.
We have more money, even though, like I said, Sunday, we spend more in entertainment in a month than some people make in a year.
Yeah. I think we spend more time in the future than we are in the past. And happiness is the present.
Yeah.
You know, I do know that in my life, I wasn't satisfied. I would be satisfied and happy when I became 16 so I could drive.
Yeah.
Then I got my license. Everything's going to be great when I get 18.
When I move out.
Yeah.
I got to get some freedom.
And then it became, when I was 18, man, if I can just get out of college.
Yeah.
Then it was.
Life's going to be great.
Great. And then marriage.
Yeah.
Then getting a good job, then having a family.
And I was always
never content with what you had now. And then it was...
Always wanting more for the future.
Then it was retirement. What was I thinking of?
Yeah.
Retirement is not the golden years.
Yeah.
It's the troubled years.
You're ready to go back to work.
Yeah. I mean, you might make a lot of money, but can you spend it? Or, you know, can you... you spend most of your money on... A lot of people spend most of their money on medical.
Yeah.
Right. You know, or a lot of them don't even make it to retirement.
Yeah.
It's golden. So I don't know why I was thinking so wrong that I should have just enjoyed where I was.
Yeah.
You know, the whole time.
When I reach this, I'll find contentment.
And then when you reach that, you know, I can't do what I can't travel like I did when I was in my 30s, 40s. But I wasn't thinking that way. I was just thinking the next.
It's interesting as you said that. I mean, part of me was like, well, you know, you long to be 16 because I can have the freedom of a car.
Yeah.
I long to be 18 because then I'm going to have freedom out from under my parents. I long to be out of college, then I'll have the freedom to do whatever I want to do. I got to work. Oh, I long to do this because then I'll have the freedom to. And it's almost like we strive and we yearn for that freedom, and things don't give you that freedom.
Yeah.
And again, contentment is not the same as freedom, but at the same time, I believe when you have contentment, there is a freedom that comes from it.
Well,
that basically says, you know what? I don't have to be on the Ferris wheel or the rat wheel of rat race of chasing stuff.
And the word that I would kind of use would be, I wish I was 16.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
But I'm looking forward to the future.
I wish I was retired. I don't want to come back to work.
It's going to be so easy.
I wish I was married.
Yep.
Or, you know, just, you know, I wish I was out of college. I wish I had a big job, a better job. Everything's a wish. You know? And we end up wishing a life away.
It's funny too.
Instead of being content where you are.
So this is there's a song that this makes me think of here, and I cannot officially 167 endorse this song. Yeah.
Just wait, man. There's some doozies.
Oh, has he not been a part of a song yet? Have I not given him any of the song drops?
He wasn't here when we did.
He wasn't Ray Wiley?
Ray Wiley.
I was thinking about Ray Wiley this week again.
You know, he popped up on one of my Spotify things, and I was like,
you're welcome.
There you go.
Yeah. Every time you see Ray Wiley now, you remember me in the show, yeah.
Right.
But I can't endorse this one either, but there's a song that when I come across this guy when I was in college, still a big fan of his stuff, but there's a song called 21, and it's a guy talking about wanting to be 21. His name's Corey Smith.
Yeah.
And he's talking about when he was in high school, he just couldn't wait to be 21. And at the end of the song, he's looking back at life at 45 years old or whatever and saying, I still wish I was 21. I think that all your examples were in the future. I can't wait to be 16, can't wait to 18, can't wait till I'm out of college, can't wait till I'm retired. But there also comes a point where we also long to go back to some of those.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so I mean, if you spend all your time.
I'm going backwards.
Yeah, now you're going backwards.
Now you're 16 now.
So if you live your whole life that way, always wanting to either go. If you live your whole life that way, you end up spending your whole life wishing you were somewhere else, wishing you had something else.
That's the point. Yeah.
You've missed it. Missed the whole ride.
The Bible, it doesn't necessarily say wish, but what the Bible is trying to teach you is live for the moment.
Yeah.
Be content. Live for the glory of the Lord today.
You're not able at this time in your life to be able to look into the future. That'll probably scare you.
Yeah.
Or you're not... If you look in the back, behind you, you feel guilty about that. You know, well, I should have did this, I should have did that. Well, that's in the past.
Yeah.
We need to, and Jesus said this in around about words that, you know, don't worry about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Matthew chapter 6.
Yeah. Tomorrow's got enough worries of itself, man.
You know, seek first the kingdom of God and all these things will be added unto you. We just need to be living in today. I'm not talking about, well, you should prepare for your future. Yes, yeah. I guess.
And you're not talking about YOLO.
Yeah.
You only live once.
So
live it with a bang. No, you're talking about being grateful and appreciative and living today for in a way that's with your eyes fixed upon Christ. Not on the past, not on the present, but on, or not on the future, but on Christ. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with laying up for yourself. Yeah. a little bit of reserve for retirement. At the same time, don't forget to lay up for yourself treasures in heaven.
Right. Yeah. Live for today and plan for tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah. But don't. Some people, I've seen this, they're so consumed about having retirement or having so much for retirement. And probably half of them won't even be able to spend it.
Yeah.
They'll probably be dead before then. You know? That's what I've seen.
That or government's going to get most of it if they don't do it right.
They're working on it.
There's that gratitude, Kenny.
Yeah. It's hard for actually to be grateful for our government.
Boy, in my case, it's been mechanics have gotten a lot of my money.
Yeah.
Now I've switched over to
HVAC.
There you go.
Yeah.
I asked when I walked in here, and he's on the phone with the guy. I said, "You still working on that truck?" No, HVAC now. Just handed it off.
Yeah, I moved on.
A different problem.
Do you think it's going to be a repair or?
I know it's a repair, pump? Man. It's going to be a new heat pump.
That hurts.
It's a little bite.
A little sting. There's a little chunk of the retirement fund you don't have to worry about anymore.
I know
the feeling, brother. I'm not going to be able to dive this month.
No. Easy, champ.
I don't know what you're going to do.
Easy. You trust the Lord.
I'm just playing with you.
Me and you talked about the Saturday, The Chosen.
That's good.
A couple of scenes from that. We talked about the Martha and Mary scene. Are you caught up on
the season? I'm trying.
So have you seen the Martha and Mary scene?
I hadn't yet.
There was an interesting one there where I think,
is this the one is working herself to death? And
a good one. That's a really good one. I love that one.
I pointed that one out. So I was watching that with Mom and Dad, and I made them pause it to make the point to them because I thought, the Bible does not provide all the context, and we've talked about that before. It's to the point and getting the words. So it doesn't tell us that the way Jesus handled that situation is that way. It doesn't say it was the other. But I think our natural human side paints Jesus, I guess, however our brain naturally wants to do it. But this scene, I thought they really did a good job of bringing his compassion to light. Right. In the way he dealt with Martha. It wasn't Martha, you're doing this wrong. Yeah. Mary's right. It was a soft, gentle correction. And again, that's not in the Bible, exactly the way he did it's not in the Bible. But I tell you what, that represented the way I hear Jesus a whole lot better than...
I think he was very much like that.
Absolutely.
Martha.
Yeah, and I think it's cool to see those things. But I also bring it up as a, when we're reading the Bible... I think it's good to try to... You can read every verse, and you can play five different versions of it if you wanted to, a mean version, a lighthearted version of this verse. But you might want to check the way you're reading those and make sure that you're hearing God's... the heart of God in the way you're reading it, right? And that it's not just always the mean master that's striking somebody down because they told a lie. Right. You know what I mean? There's compassion in everything that he does. And I think The Chosen does a good job of... I mean, they have the benefit of... huge staff and a lot of time to think about each scene and all that kind of stuff. But in the way we interpret the Bible ourselves, I think it's when you are forced to kind of put your own spin on it, because it's just in writing, it's not in picture. Why don't you put a godly spin on it instead of the human spin on it?
Or making sure that this is what's going on behind that.
Yeah.
Because I dare say you brood of vipers, you whitewashed tombs was said in a...
I'm going to say that was not friendly.
Easy versus, and I think that's where, again, context comes into play.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
That's why, I always stress context, because without context, your text is a pretext. You're just trying to prove your point for something else. Now, I need to know what's the setting. What's Jesus' mind here?
Yeah.
Well, why would this... need to be here.
Yeah. And the other one that I'll bring up real quick, because we've got to be close to 2 hours. We're getting close to it. My bladder says it's time to go. But there was another one that...
The bladder talks to you?
Right now it is. It is right now.
Right. As I get older, it talks louder.
There's a scene in the season finale where Judas is... talking to Ishmael or Shmael, the Pharisee, and he says, "I believe in who he is," and the Pharisee doesn't, but he says, "I believe in who he is," and I don't remember exactly what he says it, but basically, I believe in who he is, but he's blowing it, he's ruining it, he's not doing this. And I thought, you know what, that's such a, and I, again, another thing where I made him pause it, but it's easy to say this about Judas, and now tell me we don't do this in our lives, though, every single day. I believe in who he is, but he's doing it wrong.
Yeah.
In the very saying that, you're proving that you don't believe in who he is. Yeah. Because if you know that his ways are always right, then they're better than yours. You don't need to correct him on that.
That's right.
But that was just such an ironic... Yeah. Again, you see it come to life like that, and it's like, yeah, I do that all the time without meaning to.
And I think it's one, for me, with The Chosen and how they're portraying these. Judas is one that, man, you wonder, what was he like? What was his mind like? Because I can see more of that. I think he was a Jesus fan, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
And wanting to see him, but it had to be his way. I want it to be, we're going to overthrow the government.
I think he was conflicted, probably.
Yeah. Big time.
I mean, he wasn't one of us, but Jesus does say that. He was he called him a few names, but I believe.
I imagine so.
Son of perdition is pretty bad.
Yeah. And I guess Judas is the Greek form of Judah, right?
Sort of, yeah.
I mean, the Greek word for Judas. So he was a part of he was from the tribe of Judah.
Yeah, he was a Jew. I mean,
Jew.
He was waiting for the Messiah.
But he was the only one that wasn't from Galilee, right? I think he was he was from somewhere else.
Right.
I don't know what that meant. He wasn't in that area. I believe everybody else was from Galilee.
I'll check and see about that.
Yeah, do that.
I'm not sure if I'm not sure if we all know that, to be honest. I mean, does it say where Matthew's from? I'll have to look that up.
I honestly believe Jesus gave him every chance. Even when he said, the guy that dips in my hand, in my bowl, he probably looked at him. You really don't have to do this.
That's right. Yeah. No, I firmly believe that was him giving him his last chance to return.
Him,
and it was Jesus saying, offer him mercy and grace right there.
Yeah.
And he refused it.
I was going to bring you a book today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I think you'll like it.
What was the name of it?
It doesn't matter. It's who the author is.
Well, who's the author?
Do you remember, he grew up in the church here.
Really?
Yeah. It was a missionary from this church. He's dead now. I can't tell
if Kenny is playing 20 questions to see if you can guess it, or if he's trying to fill time while he remembers.
No, you're talking about Mitch?
No, but David Carson.
David Carson. He's dead now, is he?
He's been dead a long time ago.
No.
Yeah, he died.
He was my 7th grade English teacher.
He wrote a book, and he gave me a couple of copies before he died.
He was my 7th grade English teacher.
I'm going to bring that to you.
I thought the world of David.
Did you check his obituary?
I couldn't pull him up.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking at his obituaries. I was looking at his Facebook. I'm struggling today on the internet.
Yeah,
it's the heat.
Is it?
I guess. I can't get anything to pull up.
Does heat slow down the internet?
I don't know. It feels like it slows down
slows,
everything.
Slows you down.
I'll be bringing you that book.
I wouldn't mind having that,
and
especially
what it is,
Craig.
It's a history between the Old Testament and New Testament.
The Intertestament period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's some pretty interesting things, that 400 years there.
And the book's about that thick, so it's pretty.
Yeah, the Maccabees, and you got several other things that go on. That was a very interesting time for the Jews because they were very much into the mystical. At the same time, there was no word from the Lord, so to speak. That's a pretty interesting time.
And why was that? I haven't gotten to that. That'll be the last thing I get to, I guess.
If you look at the Old Testament, it ends with the prophet Malachi saying that, okay, there's one coming. It's kind of the end of that. And then for 400 years, it seems like God was silent. I mean, the Jews were still functioning as Jews for the most part, but then it was just the right time that, as Galatians 4 says, that God sent his son into the world. And it was the right time because you had Rome that had, you know, the peace of Rome was there. You had Rhodes. You had everybody speaking the same language. It was the right time for the gospel to basically go around the world. So I don't know why the 400 years there was just a that intertestament period of silence. So
they hadn't done anything to make him mad.
Not necessarily. I mean, they were back in. The Jews had come back from exile from Babylon. You know, I'm sure they had done a few things, but that's where the rise of, like, the Pharisees and things happened during that time, because the Jews were determined, we're not going back to exile. And so they were very much into monotheism slash, no, there's no other idols, there's nothing. That's why, you know, everything that you see the Pharisees, there's a part of, yeah, I can see why they were like that, because they were bound and determined, we're going to keep the law as best we can because we're not going back into exile.
Yeah.
It was about, 400 years?
400 years is the intertestament period. About like, from Malachi to Matthew, basically.
400 years before Moses rose up, then Jesus rises up 400 years. I mean, yeah. I've never thought about it that way, but
there's a lot going on. But he spends a lot of time on the Maccabees.
Well, I mean, that's your biggest. I mean, those were the ruling family during that time, during the time when the, you know, governments were coming in, Rome and all them were coming in. That's where Hanukkah takes place and several other things.
And then all of a sudden, it goes from because Bible doesn't mention Greece, the Greeks. I mean,
it's prophecy, but not as a world.
And in
the New Testament, Jesus had some meetings with some Greeks.
So when the Bible stops at the Persians and picks it up back at where the Romans, and there's in between is Greece and Rome taking over.
Yeah. So I've read
in the prophecy, it does mention it, but not as a history.
Yeah. So I've read the Bible and I've read it in my order. I don't want to say it's the wrong order, but it's my order. I've read it New Testament start to finish, and then back to the Old Testament. So then I'm going to catch up at the right before the New Testament when I finish it. Also, rather than reading it straight through, I'm going Act 2, then Act 1. So that'll be the last thing I read. Malachi. If I keep that schedule anyway, if that's the way it ends up playing out.
The prophets were the hardest thing for me because I don't even know what's going on because it talks about the future then. Present, future. It's all over.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the schooling, or I didn't have the maybe maturity at that time.
Even just the commentary helps with the prophets. Because you need to know what prophet was he for the northern kingdom or for the southern kingdom? Mm-hmm. Was this before the Assyrians came in and wiped out the north, or was this, you know, was he prophesying to the southern tribes? And so that plays a big role in it too.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if it'll be helpful to know, because it'll be kind of interesting when I'm reading the New Testament and I see all the things that Jesus quoted. I don't know really what he's quoting, right? Because I haven't read it. So now when I see the things that Jesus quoted, I might notice it or I might not. We'll see. It'll be fun when I get there.
A lot of the prophets, I guess I assume all of them, so what they prophesied had to come true. Yeah. So they do prophesy in current events, but all of a sudden they talk about the Messiah, then they come back to current events and do something else. So, but to be recognized as a true prophet, you had to have your prophecies to come true.
100%. You had to make 100
final exam. But then I think is it Isaiah? He talks about a king, then it goes to saint and everything. But a lot of prophecy has been fulfilled, is being fulfilled, and will be fulfilled.
Yeah.
Well, there's still a lot to be fulfilled. I think the key also to remember is a lot of times these prophets, not necessarily all of them were foreseers or predicting the future. A lot of times God raised up these prophets that called the people back to himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Jonah. I mean, you could probably find some things in there maybe referring to Christ. Yeah. But his role was go and preach to Nineveh.
Yeah.
And, of course,
he took a long route.
He's the most ironic. That story is so full of irony.
He goes
the opposite way to what he's supposed to do. You end up on a ship, and the only ones that are praying in the middle of a storm are a bunch of pagan sailors, not the prophet. the story of him going down into the ship, down to Joppa, all those, he's going down instead of up. I mean, there's so many things that as you read the story, you're like, well, this guy. And then after he sees one of the greatest revivals, I mean, you talk about it, the entire city repented, and he's still mad. And he gets mad because of a bush, and he gets mad because of the heat, and he gets mad because of a worm. I mean, this guy is not. I used to love the story, but now the more I read, I'm kind of like Jonah, man. He was kind of not the most nice or not the most Christ-like guy you ever meet.
A little temperamental.
Yeah. I mean, to me, he's
almost. Well, he didn't preach in love. That's probably.
Yeah, he preached out of grudgingly that I have to do this. But I don't know that it was love. You're right.
I imagine he was saying, they're not going to repent, man. I'm going
to. Well, then he got mad when they did.
Because he says, God, I know you are willing to forgive them. So he's mad at that. So he really is mad at God's mercy. I mean, Jonah
was
a Baptist. Jonah was a pistol, boy. I tell you. I'd hate to have a Jonah in the church because he preaches, he knows his stuff. But doggone, he'd be like the worst church member. I've always thought that's an interesting topic of who would be the best church members out of the Bible, who would be the worst.
Honestly,
it used to crack me up because the first time I ever asked that question, people were like, oh, it'd have to be Peter. And I'm like, can you imagine a church full of Simon
I was going
to
put him on the worst list.
No, I would honestly, the one that I always put as number one would be if you could get a whole bunch of Barnabases, you'd be doing well. Paul, if you get a whole bunch of Pauls, you ain't never going to have anybody there because they're going on the road and sharing their missionary trips all the time. But Barnabas is an encourager, a servant, someone like that is that truly makes one of the best church members you could have is someone who serves and loves and encourages others.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Peter would be the one I'd be like, and a church full of Jonas.
Yeah.
Woo.
Barnabas, yeah, that's his Greek name.
Right? Yeah.
Joseph is.
Son of encouragement is, but Joseph is his name.
He encouraged. Well, he stood up for Paul.
Mm-hmm. When nobody else would.
And then he didn't abandon John
Mark.
And I'm wondering.
And he still was on mission. Now, you never hear about it, but they still went out on a mission after that.
Since it was so early, I wonder if he wasn't part of the upper room. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, he could have been, but I mean, we don't know.
Because John Mark? Yep. That was his cousin or nephew?
Yeah,
or
I think. Yeah, hold on. And we'll go ahead. I'll have to look it up later. I think there's something in there about how in the book of Acts, when he's first mentioned, especially in Acts 3 and 4, he's mentioned, and I think it kind of mentions how he came about or something like that. But anyway.
I don't remember that.
Don't know if he was upper room or not, but.
I mean, I don't know how long between those sermons were, but I'm thinking maybe a couple of weeks at most.
I did want to ask you a question.
What you got, Kenny?
Well, it's not really. It's just for informational purposes.
Okay.
Now, when you give an altar call, are you expecting people to come down? Does that bother you if they don't?
It doesn't bother me. Am I expecting people? Yes. If they don't, it does not bother
but
me.
But what... I'm not talking about people that join the church.
People repenting, people coming to Christ, people, what you name it. I'm expecting at the same time. I've come to realize that, let me put it this way. It's my job to put the truth out. It's the Holy Spirit's job to work into people's lives. And so, yeah, I'm expecting it to work because when the Holy Spirit meets truth, usually it'll do something. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But if it doesn't, okay, that's...
Well, it happens quite frequently.
Yeah.
And I'm not criticizing. I just... See, I didn't know what... Can you go down there?
Yeah.
Because I don't see people going down there.
Yeah.
And what I do see is people going down there to join the church.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how it was opened up.
Yeah.
That's really...
I think it's...
Because I would like to get down there. But I don't know if you're supposed to.
Really?
Yeah.
Good question, Kenny. Let's get this on the show. Cause I wanna, so I know that's a time that you can do the walk for salvation. It's time you can come join the church. But I do know some churches also, people just walk up there, pray, and go back to their seat, and that's it. They don't, and I guess from your standpoint, how do you know if you're supposed to go over there and lend them an ear or not if they're coming down?
No, I mean, because it does happen. People come down there and pray and then walk back. And oftentimes I'll just look at them and not... Most of the time, I don't do it during the service unless I know, or they'll come and walk over there towards me, and we'll talk about it. A lot of times, if I see somebody, they may come down. I'll shoot them a text or call, depending on who they are, and just say, I'm not trying to get, you don't have to share a thing.
Yeah.
Everything good? Is there something I can pray for you with or pray for you? Yeah. And I'll leave it at that. And if they say, man, I need to sit down and talk with you, or no, we're good. It's just a few things we're working through. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that, but no, I'm praying for you anyway.
Yeah.
And leave it at that. Yeah, but as far as, I'll put it to you this way. I don't build, and I don't think it goes for Sunday school as well. I don't think we build our success on whether people respond. I learned a long time ago, I used to beat myself up. Yeah, oh my goodness, nobody responded.
You didn't do a good job. It's got
the message. Why do I even bother? And then I read a book called Delivering Yourself from Successful Ministry. And what it was about was we what we put as successful may not be what God puts as successful.
Yeah.
And it went as far as saying, all right, if you look at what Jesus did in his life, I don't know that he was very successful, human standards. I mean, how many miles did he travel away from his home? Never more than about 100.
Right.
Okay, how many people did he end up following him at the end?
120.
If that, maybe 12 give, but 120.
In the upper room.
All right. Never seemed to, never wrote a book, never did a, had no degrees. No, I mean, all the things that we would think, all right, if you're going to have a successful ministry, you got to have a lot of people, you got to have this, that, and that. But here's the thing. What he did was plant the seed in those 12 men's hearts, and it changed the world. And so, and ministry is the long game. Hey, anybody can go for a flash in the pan. Yeah. I can make you emotional and make you cry and come down to the front. But I'm looking for, if we're making strong disciples, you'll see it. I don't need a response on Sunday morning to hype up and get emotional. No, what you'll see people growing in their walk, and you'll see a mature church. I've seen it happen, and I see it happening here. That you think about the maturing and the folks that are growing. Yeah, we still got a long way to go, but you see it happening.
See, the reason why I ask you that, I didn't want to put you on the spot. I knew you could delete it.
I'm keeping that. That was gold.
Since when have you had a word about putting somebody on the spot?
Well, that was that might be a little personal.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to. I've been going to the Baptist church a long time.
Right.
And I, you know, probably 5% I might disagree, but we disagree with everything. But the essentials are pretty much the same.
Yeah.
But the churches that I grew up in, you would tarry at the altar.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be 2-3 hours. It'd be all night sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Praying. I don't see that.
That's the Pentecostal.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
Yeah.
And our worship services, there was no time limit.
Yeah.
You could worship, sing 3 hours if you wanted to. I'm not saying this happened every time.
Huh.
It doesn't happen every time. We'd be worn out.
You'd have some ill bands.
Yeah.
I know
that. Oh, yeah. And preaching an hour... I personally think if you can't say something, if you can't say in a half an hour, then you don't need to be up there.
I agree. If you go over 30 minutes on a text, and I know sometimes I do, but it's just a little bit. If you go over 30 minutes, it needs to be a two-parter.
Well, you've just lost half your audience.
But it needs to be a two-parter anyway. Yeah. When you look at Jesus' sermons, other than Matthew 5, 6, and 7, usually it's a story and not huge drawn-out parables.
And I was getting ready to say that probably the one that you could really get away with that over a half an hour is a testimony or a story. Because everybody wants to hear it. Yeah.
But Paul sure enough preached all night, put the boy to sleep, fell out the window.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, he did. That's how I came up through the ranks is a lot of worship. And sometimes we
ranks.
Sergeant Major.
Sometimes you didn't have a spirit move where you didn't have anybody preach.
Yeah.
That would be sometimes. But we'd spend 2 or 3 hours praying for each other, praying. You know, and come to the Baptist, it was like, that's different.
It's a lot more private.
It's a lot more private.
And it's a lot more, we're still praying for each other.
I know. But it's devotional.
Yeah.
I get that.
That's a big difference. Between the two.
I mean, the Pentecostal is the same way. They do devotionals too.
Sure. Oh, I'm not saying they don't.
But the worship, I get it. You can worship the Lord in many forms, but only one way with His Spirit and truth. But there's many forms to it. Sitting on your hands if you want to.
Yeah.
or sitting on your head, you get tired.
Yeah, I can sit quietly in the woods and worship the Lord just as much as I can singing here. At the same time, though, I want to be here with my brothers and sisters singing. Yeah.
And you could, you know, stand on your head. I wouldn't recommend it. You would get tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you want to, or clap your hands. And I mean, David was criticized for dancing. Mm-hmm.
I was at a Christmas program one time, and it was just supposed to be a one-hour Christmas program, and people started standing up and testifying.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
that.
Now,
I mean, because that's a...
This was a Baptist church. This is a Southern Baptist church.
Oh, yeah, I was there.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. After about five, six, eight of these testimonies, they were about 5-10 minutes each. Yeah. Well, then you started to look around and you started to tell people that felt like they were left out. So now you have people starting to stand up and testify just because felt like they better not.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't want to feel like the Spirit wasn't moving them. It was everybody else. So about 2.5-3 hours later, it's like we never did get out of this thing. Because I'm just like, I mean, if it was supposed to be a round table 10-15 minutes each. Do what? No. No, well, this wasn't your it wasn't your church.
there are I've been in testimonies too where people just I wouldn't say everyone 10 minutes, you know, someone might do 2 minutes, 1 minute, you know, thank the Lord for what he's done for me today and you know, a few other things and how he helped me to get to work today. Just want to thank the Lord and sit back down. But I've seen it here maybe once or twice. I think I've seen it.
I've seen it several times.
Okay.
Used to be on Sunday nights when we had Sunday nights. We'd have opportunity for people to share. And I used to do it.
Yeah, it wasn't during Sunday mornings. No, Sunday mornings was like kind of sacred, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, and I think
it's more
as a pastor, I look at Sunday morning as we've got a lot of guests here.
Yeah.
And somebody get up there and start sharing something that maybe... Yeah.
And it was always done on Wednesday nights or Sunday
nights.
Yeah.
I used to do it a lot down at Baptist Grove on Sunday nights. So, okay, let's have a word of, because I know you hear me enough. But here's the thing. I never had it longer ago than about 25 or 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would, I mean, there was just not everybody's into sharing. Just depends on where you're at and how you were raised, a lot of it.
Shout out, by the way, to the deacons. Y'all pulled off communion, for the most part.
I didn't know
I haven't turned it off yet. No, we're still live.
Shout out to Bernice and the deacons.
It seemed like that went better this time. I tried to sneak out.
We have a meeting on Friday night to do it.
Yeah, well, I will tell you about that. I wasn't going to do it, but then I get this other email because I had my foot operation. Then I get this email once again,
who's going to be there?
Who's going to be there?
Because it was vacation.
I just got my boot off. I said I'll be there if you need me. Yeah, come on.
Hoping you would.
Yeah. And this wasn't the first time. The first time, you know, I said I'd be there, but y'all didn't need me.
Yeah, so I ain't going to be there. Don't count on
me. Don't offer if you don't mean it.
And so I said, okay. So I got the easiest part, which is this far out aisle right here.
Number one.
Number one and whatever. I just know that the end aisle is the easiest. All you do is just go back there and wait. And then you come up. The center... You have to do the center, and the next ones that go back, they got to go upstairs, then come back to the back. And the other guys
have to catch
a piano and all that. And so I don't have nothing to do but just hold the plate. And so we're not going to walk fast at all. Man, we'll be behind. Man, he flew down there. I knew about broke my neck trying to keep up with him. I thought I was going to – I had to grab the pew a couple of times just to hold on. Man, this guy's going too fast.
Yeah.
I had Christian with me, and he had been complaining, poking me, and saying he needed to go to the bathroom. And I thought, well, we'll go during communion. I know that'll take a while.
Oh, gosh. Man, I timed it. I go back and watch.
Did you?
And I timed it. I was like, golly, we got to streamline this, baby. I mean, it's so many. It's so much, and it's...
Well, you don't have to streamline the walking down. I think
that's fast enough.
Ted has got it down.
Code. We got to get everybody to Ted speed.
I got one last question about the altar call. Have you ever been a part of – I've been in sermons before that I thought this happened. I don't know if here or other places, where preacher gives – he thinks a powerful sermon. We sing a verse of Amazing Grace. Nobody comes down. Let's sing another one. Let's keep on going. Somebody's coming down. Is that usually premeditated, or is that – do you think some preacher's like, no, let's give it a little bit more time?
I think some of them are – and again – as I said earlier, I think some guys preach for the response.
Yeah. Yes.
Some guys preach for the amen.
Yeah.
Some people aren't happy unless, hey, you've said amen, or I've get certain people to respond, or there's got to be 30 people at the altar. I've had that.
Yeah.
And but that's not what I'm preaching for.
Yeah.
What I'm preaching for, or hopefully what I'm preaching for, is I want to make disciples. And so I don't need every Sunday the altar to be full. I pray that it is, and I love when it is.
Sure.
At the same time, if people's hearts and their relationship is growing with the Lord and they're going deeper with the Lord, what more do I need to be doing?
And you see it every other day. You might not see the results when you're preaching Sunday, but you see it the other 6 days.
That's it. And I'm looking for it the other 6 days.
That's right.
Because I'm looking for it in committee meetings, and I'm looking for it in... Sure. How people talk and what people put in as their emphasis,
yeah.
Where you, and you'll notice it. I mean, that's the thing that's so cool about being in church and in being around church people, is you'll be able to tell real quick when you hear them and you hear them talk and you hear the way they respond to each other.
Yeah.
And you see them love each other.
Go back to the response of singing songs. And I never really got this, that you had to make a public profession
of faith.
And it had to be going down the aisle. I still don't get it. I don't agree with it.
Well, the way you live your life is a public profession of faith in a way.
It is that. I mean, that walk. I think it's, I think it's to be presented.
For the whole world to know.
Or even the church has to vote on you to be baptized. I mean, you don't think that's right?
I didn't know they did that. Do they?
Well,
do
I mean,
that?
When we present someone as for membership. Baptism, you're presenting that as make a motion to receive. All in favor, we say amen.
All opposed, what would you do if you heard one no?
I'd say, you're an idiot.
Has that ever happened to you, or would you be surprised?
I mean, voting to receive someone?
Yeah.
No, never had that happen. Now, could it? Sure, it could. I've had times when people come down there that... Let's sit down and talk.
So you do meet before those guys come down there.
Oh, 99.9% of the time. This past Sunday, I had someone come down that I hadn't had a chance. So I sat down and said, listen, we need to talk about, tell me about your conversion to the Lord. And I had time this Sunday.
Okay.
But it's one of, I want to make sure before I present anybody to be either baptized or anything else, most of the time it is, okay, where are you coming from? What's your background? Do you know the Lord? Because I think we can assume too much.
So you cannot go down there. You have to know them before you present them.
Me personally, yeah. 99.9% of the time.
You know them. They've already called you.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not something rigged where these people are just
rigged.
Showing up.
Well, I've been on both sides.
It's a vote of 2020.
Yeah, I didn't know if you had... Certain people just come in, go around different churches.
Yeah. No, so it is.
So it make you look good.
I like to sit down with the folks. I like to discuss where they're from. I like to discuss.
And they do live around here.
What's your spiritual giftedness? Yeah. What are you? Is this a good church for you? Because I've been known to tell some folks, you don't want to go here. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. I mean, I just think they wouldn't be happy. And our folks wouldn't be happy, and it'd just be better. You want to know the ones that I usually send away?
Yeah, I want names.
No, if they come in, let me tell you what I do. If they come in and the first thing they do is, Pastor Ben, love the worship service. I want a copy of the bylaws and constitution and your personnel manual. I usually say, you know what? I got a great church for you. Just saying. Because if you're
people
already,
do that?
You want, oh.
Yeah. Seriously?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. So I've been on both sides of that. When I joined Baptist...
Just kidding.
When I joined Baptist Grove, we sat down and we had that conversation before. We had met at Starbucks, I think. This time, when I joined here, we hadn't talked ahead of time.
Well,
I mean, we had texted and I'd talked.
But we had had that talk at Starbucks years
right,
years
yeah, okay.
So I knew you.
You knew me.
And I knew
you. Didn't know me well enough. Yeah. You told me you miscounted my kids.
But I knew your heart and I knew your walk. And I think that's the thing, too. If I know who you are coming from.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know their family.
Yeah. That's a different thing too.
So, but if somebody comes in, I don't think I realized that. So if somebody comes in off the street, first time they've been here,
mm-hmm.
and you've never seen them before, and they love the service, and they come up at the altar call,
yeah,
and they say, I'm coming by.
I want to join now.
Now, if they say, I want to be baptized, is right. I mean, when somebody says they want to be baptized, there's usually a little bit more.
Because I want to know, all right, so you say, hey, man, I want to know about this Savior you're talking about. I want to trust in the Lord. That's great, man.
Yeah.
And usually it's, all right, if it's that, give me 5 minutes to wrap this up. We're going to get down to my office, and we'll talk about if I need to draw it on the board or whatever. Yeah.
But that's not trying to be a member of the church at that point. They might be saying, I want to accept Christ, but that's really just the – they're not saying I want to join the church in that
part. Exactly. I just want to get right with the Lord.
Right.
That's a different story, and that's another meeting. I think where I'm always going to be kind of skeptical is, if this is your first time walking in the doors and you want to join, why?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that I'm judging. It's just that
– I get that.
I want to make sure – one, if I'm a one day, there's going to be a day, I hope, Lord willing, when I'm 78, 79 years old, I'm going to retire. I've had enough. I'm going to retire. The Lord's done with
78.
Me.
78? You think you're going to live that long?
I'm planning it.
Okay.
So 78, I'm going to retire.
Well, you're going to live for the rest of your life.
That's right.
I mean, you're going to live
the rest
eternity.
Of my life.
You just got one more river to cross.
And I'm hoping that river's miles down the road. But it is one of, when I retire, I'm going to go to a church one day. And I'm going to make sure. I'm going to go and sit down for a while, listen to the guy preach. I want to hear, you know, what he's getting about, what is on his heart. Where can I serve? How can I make a difference here at this church? So to do that in one Sunday,
be
done.
You won't retire at this church.
I don't know. No, what I'm gonna go the route of Paul Jones. I'm gonna do the interim pastor, because they can say anything they want. Don't worry about it.
So you done messed around, about got me into a second episode now, because I'm really into this. I didn't realize about all the processes. I thought of altar call is essentially, I'm either coming because I don't know the Lord and I want to get to know Him.
It can be various
and that's,
things.
You know, now I'm saying, are there three different things? There's the I want to start a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get baptized, or I want to join the church, or does the relationship and baptism usually go hand in hand?
Because we're Baptists, relationship and baptism usually go hand in hand.
But baptism doesn't, because I think I've always thought of it as the opposite. It's like, I want to join the church.
Right.
Okay, well, have you been baptized? If not, we need to do that.
Well,
that the relationship's kind of...
And a lot of it depends on what, you know, their age, what we've sat down and talked about. Because like I said, most of the time I know what they're coming to... You know, because a lot of times I'll get a call from, might be a mom. It might be somebody saying, hey, can we get an appointment for tomorrow at 3? Yeah. And what it is sitting down talking with you know, your children and just saying, all right, are they ready?
Yeah.
And if they are, then let's go for it. If not, let's, as I always tell them, look, this is the salvation of a child. There's no need to be in a race.
Yeah.
God's got him covered.
Yeah.
And then when he makes that decision, we're good to go. I mean, there's no need to be in a hurry. At the same time, though, all right, now's the time to begin thinking about it, and let's make that decision.
Yeah.
See, when I became a member of this church, I just went down. I had me. Well, poor Sam knew me. I did.
But you had been baptized.
Yeah.
Did he do
your
church?
Wedding? You did your wedding too, right?
Yeah. You had been baptized at another church.
No, I had not been baptized in.
So you got baptized here?
No, I got baptized in Pamlico Sound.
Well, I mean, you got baptized
down
by
the church. In the river,
but by a church.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't the river; it's the sand. Salt water.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know that takes.
Well,
it tastes kind of salty.
No, he used to dirty. They had to use salt water to clean him up.
I don't know that takes. Man, you better do that again.
It held me down for a while.
usually it's that, and I've met with them. But it all depends. And then sometimes the thing that's oftentimes so difficult, it's hard to hear down there.
Yeah.
You got music playing, you got people singing. They may be emotional and struggling to get the words out for what's going on. And you're kind of like, man, just cut, you know. I want to sit down and make sure I understand what you're saying, help you in that regard, or basically say, I don't know that God would call you to do that, or, hey, yeah, this is great.
Well, I think we got enough now. Let's see. Yeah, hour 20. We'll be good.
Yeah.
I think we're, about 3 o'clock. I got to get kids anyway. Bye, everybody. Thank y'all.
Garrett, I'm going to ask you if you'll join me. This is Garrett Lael. This is a great, great friend. He was baptized at 17 years old. He's had the ups and downs of life, but through it all, I believe he is a testimony of, listen, God's faithful and good, and he has two lovely children and three.
Three. Where did the third one come from?
When life throws everything at you, stay focused and walk with the Lord. I promise you, even through the valleys, He's there.